As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome in to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Thursday, June 16th. Michael Beller and Al Melchior here steering you through this episode of TAFBP. It is Thursday, which means we have a guest with us as well. We will introduce him in just a second, but first, let me say what's up to Al Melchior. Al, what's going on, man?
What is up? I am impressed here with the way you just rolled off the acronym very naturally.
I deal with a lot of acronyms in this because I host this show and then I host the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, which you call TAFFP. I host Best on the Board, our gambling podcast, call that BOB or sometimes BOTB. So I'm so used to doing them that once I remember what show I'm doing, the acronym actually comes pretty naturally. If I'm going to get into trouble, it's I'm going to call this, hey, welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. That's where the trouble's going to happen for me. Once I get that first sentence out, then we're all systems go.
All right. Well, I'm ready for some baseball talk.
Not only baseball talk, Al, but closer talk specifically. To do that, we bring on Greg Jewett. You can, of course, read all of Greg's great work here at The Athletic. He's got a fresh closer, reliever, really everything that runs the gamut. If a guy doesn't start a game, you can find it in Greg's column just published on Wednesday. I want to say, or published on Tuesday, updated on Wednesday. So this is some fresh stuff in the column that we're going to dig into on this episode of the Fantasy Baseball Pod. Greg, what's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me on, gentlemen. It's always always an honor to be on the show.
Damn, an honor. My God. Mm-hmm. Al, we got a lot to live up to here over these next 40 minutes or so. Yeah. Jeez. All right, let's get into it, Greg. We're going to it is June 16th. We are, I don't know, what, like 6 weeks away, a mm-hmm. month and a half away from the trade deadline. We know that's the hottest commodity at the trade deadline. You know, 9 times out of 10, with the way baseball's played, is going to be the best closer who is made available. We know that is true, and we always play that speculation game in the fantasy world. So we're going to talk about that, you know, sometimes specifically, sometimes it's going to be a little bit more tangential to our discussion on this episode, but it's going to be there. And so I want to ask you, before we actually get into specific players, specific bullpens, how do you decide on June 16th or June 18th or June 22nd when to say when on speculating on a closer? What goes into that decision? Team, the likelihood of the person ahead of him getting traded? Like, how do you make that decision? How do you know when it's right to say, yes, this is a guy I want to grab right now, even though he doesn't have a closer's job at the moment?
Well, that's very difficult in the current climate when you're looking at the every day more injuries accumulate. And you know, the article published on Tuesday, and I would say the article was out for about 2 hours and it was already outdated with the the amount of news that dropped on Tuesday afternoon once it publishes. And that's the unfortunate world of relievers. As far as what you asked, I think what we're paying attention to, and I do it on Reliever Recon, is about at the end of every month when we go into it, start looking at the playoff odds and just really you're trying to project who's going to be selling. And, you know, we know that the way things are going right now, Detroit's going to be selling and they've got a couple of expiring contracts. Colorado should be selling. They had to have learned from their lessons last year. There's no reason for them to keep Daniel Bard unless they're going to sign him to an extension. And obviously they should probably deal Alex Colome as well. So you're looking at clearly identifying six teams that you know are probably going to end up selling. And I think you can probably add the Cubs to that. They signed a whole bunch of veteran relievers to one-year contracts, knowing that it would just proliferate their rebuild by flipping them at the trade deadline and getting more prospects. So identifying those situations, I think, are the keys. Unfortunately, like with Colorado, with Tyler Kinley now being out for the season, it changes who you might want to target in that bullpen. Now we kind of have to go back into a wait-and-see mold and see who emerges over the next couple of weeks as their potential high-leverage replacement for Bard and Colome if they deal them.
Well, Greg, I know we're going to get to that situation and probably some of these others that will likely be flipping in the next month to month and a half. But I want to focus in on a situation that's a very recently changed situation. One of those breaking news items that you just referred to, and that is the Phillies' decision to take Corey Knebel out of the closer's role. How do you see this situation? Do you think that Knebel is just going to be out for a short while and just, you know, try to get right with a couple of lower leverage appearances, or do you think that it really is an appropriate time, first of all, to move on from him, and secondly, to speculate on a potential alternative in that bullpen?
I don't think Philadelphia wants to move on from him. The only way that would have happened is if they fell out, and then he would have been a trade situation as well, since he's on a one-year deal. I think the way they constructed their bullpen, if things go right, then Knebel is their closer. I do very much like what Sir Anthony Dominguez has done this year. He's really turned the corner. You know, he led this team in saves a couple of years ago. It's not like he's a forgotten commodity. It's just a matter of, you know, they signed Knebel on the one-year deal. They wanted to do more, but he wanted the one-year thing, so he had options at the end of the season. But this also allowed them to see what they had in Dominguez and other things. And actually, Connor Brogdon has pitched much better the last 2 weeks. So they've got some developing things there. And then you've got Brad Hand can be a matchups play if they want to do that sort of a thing. So you could see the next 2 weeks where they might mix and match based on the late inning matchup, which, you know, we hate seeing, but the old closer by committee format with Dominguez and Brad Hand probably in there since he's a veteran with closer experience. You know, he's not getting the strikeouts like he used to in the past, but in a pinch against if two out of three hitters are going to be left-handed in the ninth, then you're probably going to see him over Dominguez in that situation. But I would see Dominguez as the primary option and then Hand filling in with the ancillary saves and those matchups that we just spoke about going forward, with Brogdon filling in the eighth inning for either one of those guys or however they want to mix and match it going forward. Alvarado's just too volatile in the other situations there. So, you know, I know some people bet on Sir Anthony last weekend, so I would definitely hold on to him in that situation. If you want to add him, you can. Just don't go crazy because we don't know if it's a two-week window or a rest of the season window, and that's the hardest part with all these situations.
Daniel Hudson's been a really valuable reliever for fantasy managers, for the Dodgers this season, and don't really see that changing. Certainly not for the Dodgers, but obviously his fantasy situation changes a little bit with Craig Kimbrel back in the ninth inning. In solds leagues, you know, Daniel Hudson's obviously an easy keep. Those opportunities are going to keep piling up on this Dodgers team. Is there enough here in saves-only leagues for you to want to hold on to Hudson?
In a 15-team, yes. In a 12-team, it's difficult. It just depends on your situation. I hate saying it, but it's always context dependent. With the ratio protection he's provided and a decent amount of strikeouts, I think he's viable in a 12-team. It just really depends on where you are in the mix. If you're really trying to move up, you might have to get somebody that's in a bigger timeshare. The thing with Kimbrel is very hard to read is he ramped up his velocity the other day and then he uncorked those wild pitches and had like a 33 strike percentage in that outing. And then last night he dialed back the velocity back to the 96 range. His command was better and he only gave up that RBI single, but it was a leadoff triple against Tyler Anderson that let the inherited runner score. So it wasn't a horrible outing for Kimbrel. So it's which iteration of Kimbrel are we going to get? The one with a little bit better command but less velocity, or the one that's trying to overthrow and that seems to get him into trouble? So he's, you know, if you have Kimbrel, I think it's almost necessary to handcuff him with Hudson. But for the Hudson people, like I said, 15 team, yes, 12 team, you might be able to find a better option if it's necessary for you to move up in the standings.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, Greg, it seems like it's been a while since we've had a new closer come on the scene that seems to have a big share of the appearances. And now we've got, you know, arguably three. We've got Tanner Scott for the Marlins, who's been getting pretty steady opportunities. Tanner Houck in Boston. You've got Kendall Graveman with the White Sox. I want to focus in on Scott first, because he had a pretty brutal outing on Wednesday against the Phillies, gave up a home run that turned it from a Marlins win to a Marlins loss, was one strike away from actually escaping a jam. Should we be worried about that, those of us who spent a lot of fab on Tanner Scott last weekend? Do you think that that's putting him in some jeopardy?
I don't think so. You know, when you throw sliders 70% of the time, you're going to hang one. And he hung one to Stubbs, and Stubbs did not miss it. Now, earlier in that sequence, there was a borderline strike that the umpire did not call that lit up on the, if it had been a robotic ump, that strike might have been tallied. And then that at bat doesn't happen. So, you know, his command, again, he needs command. So when he was on fire the first six outings in June, he was throwing strikes about 70% of the time with a 21 swing strike rate. In that outing yesterday, he only threw strikes 59% of the time, which put him into deeper counts, and that's where he gets into trouble. He needs to attack early and then let his slider eat. So when his command is off just even slightly with the slider and the four seam, he struggles a bit. And you've seen that happen. And he had a dust up on his last outing in May, and then he turned around and turned in those great six outings that led us to add him in Fab money. So Mattingly's pretty loyal, so I don't think it'll be an issue, especially with Cole Sulcer going on the injured list. The only chance you might have is Anthony Bass might work his way in, but it seems like Mattingly really prefers him as a setup option only.
And been a pretty valuable setup option, certainly for the Marlins, really, regardless of who's been coming in behind him to polish off the Marlins' close wins here and there. From one Tanner to another, it's just like an episode of Full House. Tanner Houck, the answer in Boston? I mean, we've been looking for one for a while here. Is Tanner Houck the guy?
I think so. Now, what we want to know is he going to be a one-inning guy, or is he going to be the Swiss Army knife sort of Garrett Whitlock version of a reliever for Alex Cora? So the next week or so, I think, will give us much better intel. But he, in the two save chances he got in Seattle, he converted both, and he looks very good. His stuff plays much better. And years ago, scouts kind of hinted that they thought he'd be a better reliever than a starter based on his pitch offerings. So, and we're starting to see that now. I'm very bullish on Houck. It's unfortunate because, like, the one share I have of him, I had three other closers. I had him as a upside starter play. So now I got to make a decision in the NFBC. Do I drop one of these guys? That's the unfortunate part when you're in a non-trade league, when you get too many options, but it is what it is, so I'll figure it out. But you can play the matchups game there if you want to. But yes, I think Houck is very good. Now, the other thing we want to watch is, what are they going to do with Chris Sale? Is he going to come back as a starter, or are they going to expedite his arrival time and use him? Yes. They can end up having a tandem of Sale and Houck as, like, you know, four out save guys, or however they want to rock it. once he gets back. So yeah, they you know, that'd be a hell of a tandem back there, and that would take them out of the trade market there, and then they could go after a starter. So I'm really curious how the Red Sox are going to handle Chris Sale's return, but you can see a dynamic duel in the back of that bullpen.
Yeah, well, the latest report suggests that at least the Red Sox want to use Sale as a starter, but I definitely do have some skepticism. It's one thing to have a plan. It's another thing for that plan to go perfectly as you envision it. So I think, yeah, there's still a lot up in the air there in Boston. Now, I referenced Kendall Graveman a little while ago as part of this group of three new closer candidates for fantasy, along with the two Tanners. Graveman, I think it's easy to presume, would just be filling in while Liam Hendricks is out. But weighing those three, and again, understanding, Greg, that, yeah, this is all situational, you know, depending on what your roster needs are. But in the proverbial vacuum, Kendall Graveman, Tanner Houck, Tanner Scott, who would you be spending the most fab money on this weekend if all three were available in your league?
Houck. I just think he has the best team right now of those three. And I think he has the trust of Cora. Now, I know La Russa will use Graveman. We just don't know. Now, it could end up being Graveman if the forearm strain from Liam Hendricks turns into something more. And there's a lot of nervous people watching this because it went from, oh, he's just getting a couple of days off to, oh, his arm's a little tight. And then all of a sudden he's on the IL with the forearm strain, which is, you know, a lot of people see that as a precursor to Tommy John. So we're really, really on the fence there. So Houck is 1A, Graveman's 1B, and then Tanner Scott, just because of his team, ends up third in this thing, even though he can end up being the one person that keeps it the whole year.
It'd be very White Sox-y for that to happen with just the injury luck that that team has had.
Oh, yeah. It's been a mess.
I mean, they came into this year thinking like, man, we're gonna if we have leads and after the fifth, like, that's it. And now you've got Aaron Bummer back on the IL, Garrett Crochet obviously with Tommy John, Liam Hendricks now on the IL, and again, people holding their breath related to that team. Just a total mess for them in the bullpen. Right when the offense gets healthy too, right? Lance Lynn comes back, all these other guys come back, and then boom, the bullpen.
Yeah, it's like golf. You know, you can't get all, you can't drive, putt, and use your irons well in the same round. It's always two out of three.
Yeah. It's exactly what the White Sox have been dealing with for the last couple of seasons here. Former White Sox, Alex Colome, someone who you referenced at the start of the show, former Red Sox, Daniel Bard, talking about these Rockies. If you were making a decision on them right now, like, we know this team is going to be making some moves. Like, they have to make some moves. They're obviously not going to be going to the postseason. So if you're making a call on them, you, Greg, your 15-team fantasy league, you can have one of these guys right now. You know what is staring you and them in the face with the trade deadline. Which one do you want? Which one are you prioritizing?
Well, obviously it would have been Kinley, but I think, you know, Robert Stevenson finished last year pretty strong, and he's somebody that has a hard time staying healthy. I don't know if it's just his DNA or whoever you want to do it, but there are short bursts where he flashes. So if he can turn things around in his next few appearances, then I think he could be worthy of being that stash candidate. A couple of their guys who throw hard in the minors just don't have the command. So I think it could be Stevenson. It's funny because in the preseason, a lot of sharps were on him. And then when Bard emerged in spring and then they signed Colome and all the other things, kind of shuffled him to the back and he got off to a slow start and yada, yada, yada. So long story short, I guess as of today, it would be Robert Stevenson.
All right. Well, Texas bullpen, I thought this was kind of a settled situation with Joe Barlow, but do you see anybody maybe working their way into a larger share of saves or, you know, maybe just kind of frame this in the similar way that with the Rockies, that do you see Barlow as a trade candidate? Is there anybody that we should be speculating on in Texas right now?
I don't think they'll trade Barlow. It's just weird. 2 years in a row now, he starts out strong and then his swinging strike rate evaporates. You know, it happened in 2021. I mean, he still converted a lot of saves in the second half last year, but once he switched from being a setup to the closer, the swinging strike rate dipped. And we're seeing that again. That's why I put that chart in my post. What we want to see is Jose Leclerc, how he looks when he – odds are he's going to rejoin the team next week. Either that, unless they can get an extension on his rehab. I think they would like to get him one more week in the minors, but Levi Weaver reported that LeClerc was going to do a back-to-back in the next couple of days, get a day off, make one more outing, and then the Rangers will probably promote him. So maybe in a week or two, it could be LeClerc. So I guess if he's available in your league and you want to stash him for a couple of dollars this weekend, it might not be a bad flyer, especially if you have Barlow. That would be the person I speculate on. And then further down the road, Jonathan Hernandez will be on his way back. I almost think Texas is going to approach the trade deadline as a healthy LeClerc and a healthy Hernandez is what they need to help the bullpen, and then they'll figure out other places.
Let's stick in the AL West for a second here and talk about the Seattle Mariners. Paul Sewell, Diego Castillo, they seem to be sharing the job right now, and both of them have had stretches where they've looked like the best reliever in this team's bullpen. We expected a lot out of Sewald coming into this year. Hasn't necessarily hit the marks that he hit last season, and of course, from just a pure save opportunity and racking up save perspective, you know, this team has been nowhere near as good as we expected them to be to get those save opportunities to the guys in the ninth inning. But that's what we're looking at right now. We're looking at a little bit of Castillo, a little bit of Sewald. Are both these guys holdable right now?
Well, in the TGFBI, I was in a pinch, so I added Castillo this weekend for a whopping $27. But I figure he's hot, and he's one of these guys. When he's hot, you ride him. And actually, there was an appearance last week where he faced the heart of the order, and then Sewald pitched a ninth. It was almost like a role reversal from last year. So I'm okay with Castillo. There's two factors here. Ken Giles has not been doing great in his rehab. But again, they felt that with his coming off of the injury he had, it was going to take a longer rehab thing to get him turned around. And then the night before last, Matt Brash recorded his first save at AAA. And I think people are forgetting about, you know, how folks were excited about Brash and the money people spent on him and Fob at the beginning of the season. You know, Edwin Diaz was a failed starting pitcher who transition to the bullpen very well, and Matt Brash could follow that same exact suit. I mean, we know he can hit triple digits on the radar. If he can get the command in the short stints, I think Brash and Giles rejoining this bullpen in July could be the shot in the arm that these guys need. We just don't know if Brash would be like a potential multi-inning guy, or if they would keep him kind of in a setup role at the beginning before they gave him a save chance. But those are two names to track in that bullpen that could be rejoining it soon and make an impact with them and make that, you know, they functioned best last year when they had Steckenrider, Sewald, and Castillo all pitching well. Mm-hmm. This might be a situation where if they add those two arms in there and you get Eric Swanson filling in that Casey Sadler pivot role where things start clicking again for them.
Well, let's talk about the Pirates bullpen, which has been pretty stable. David Bednar has been really good. And one thing that I took note of, Greg, was that in Wednesday's game, Bednar pitched 2 2/3. That is now the fifth save that he's had this year of at least two innings, which I would think would have to lead the majors. But
that does.
Okay, it seemed like a pretty safe bet.
There you go. See, You could do this in your sleep.
Yeah. Well, Michael and I were talking about this episode, a day or two ago. And Michael, you said something about, let's talk about Will Crow. I've got a little bit of a different take here on the Pirates bullpen because Bednar doesn't go up for arbitration for a couple more years. Of course, he's been incredibly solid. He is not universally rostered. So I think I would make the argument Bednar is under-rostered. Rather than over-rostered or somebody that maybe we need to be, you know, fading in the coming weeks. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, again, we know the team's not very good, and his save last night snapped a 9-game losing streak. I mean, there was a lot of people on Twitter like, wait, Bednar's coming in the seventh? And in the back of my head, I said, they're just going to let him ride. And sure enough, I fell asleep watching it. But, I had that on the TV and he did it. And, you know, he can be efficient and he's such a he's underappreciated. And it's hard to believe. But if he was on a better team, a lot more people would know him. And when you read the quotes from the locker room saying, you know, He's got that dog in him, and we knew he had it locked down. Pittsburgh's gotten a lot of bad press. So if they're going to promote O'Neill Cruz and they're going to start this whole build on the fly, trading Bednar would really be a bad, bad message to send that locker room. And I think the team would totally revolt if they did that. Now, if they can trade Stratton, sure. And Will Crow would be able to fill in. The two most trusted relievers in the Pirates bullpen are Will Crow and David Bednar right now. And you saw that yesterday. Those two guys took over and got that game and snapped that losing streak. So, yes, to what you're saying, Al, Bednar is beyond underappreciated. I highlighted him a couple of weeks ago, and obviously it's still not enough.
Yeah, not a really soft spot in that lineup that they went through too, with all those innings going, and finally getting a win against the Cardinals. So an impressive performance, certainly, from Bednar and Crow. See, most teams we talk about, even these lowly Pittsburgh Pirates, we can find something good to talk about with them. We don't have to search too hard, too high, too low, too anything to find something good to talk about with the Tampa Bay Rays. And this is a team we always, always, always trust to have a good bullpen, and we're seeing that come to fruition once again this season. In solds leagues, in saves plus holds leagues, how many relievers on this team do you think are viable?
Well, actually, right now, I say it's down to about three just because it's been wonky with them, but with the injuries and everything else. But right now, Jason Adam, Colin Pache, and Ryan Thompson, he had a better outing yesterday. He's been struggling a little bit coming down the stretch here, but those three are still very good. And the top two, Jason Adam and Colin Pache, are two guys, again, that are underappreciated, but it's because they have to share it. With all of the injuries they've undergone, with Fire rising out and Kitcher's done for the year, these two might get a little bit more burn the next couple of weeks. So Adam was my backup bid to Diego Castillo when I was just looking to get an ancillary save guy that at least will help my ratios and still get a save here and there. I mean, you know, when you're in a 15-team league, you're not going to get too many primary save shares, especially when you have limited. I have a limited budget based on guys I added earlier in the year, so I'm trying to get guys cheaper before they pop. But that's those. You know, Adam and Pache are two guys that do. And I couldn't believe Pache the one weekend when they were playing the Yankees, they had him matched up with Aaron Judge. I was like, you know, when they do their pockets of the lineup, it was a little surprising to see that's how they felt. But yes, the Rays relievers, and Calvin Fache's showing some nice stuff. So we'll see how they progress and what guys they can get back. That's going to be a huge key to them staying viable for the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, the Rays, they have so many potential options for saves that I have hard tracking them all. I really don't know them from Adam.
Sorry, I could saving that one up. Oh, man. Good come one. On.
Good one, Al.
All right, well, let's I'll
that's
slink
so
away
Pache.
Here and I'm just going to slink away and change the topic here to the Cardinals.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paulo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So and this is a selfish fantasy question for me because I've been rolling Giovanni Gallegos out in my 12-teamer, kind of looking over my shoulder every week at what Ryan Helsley is doing. Is it time for me to cut ties with Gallegos, maybe look for Helsley in leagues where he's available?
I think we're at, you know, I will give the Cardinals credit. At the beginning of the season, they said they were going to do closer by calculation, and they've kind of stuck with it. You know, it hasn't been one guy or the other. I mean, it started out with Gallegos, and then Helsley made some inroads, and then just when we thought it was Helsley, Gallegos got to save the other day. And this is the, you know, I use the HLR term a lot in my columns, but it appears when you listen to the broadcast from the Cardinals, Skip Schumacher intimated that he thinks Helsley's the HLR. So when it's the, you know, 3-4-5 or 2-3-4 part of the lineup, if it's in the eighth inning, it might end up being Helsley, which would open the door for Gallegos to get the save. And then vice versa, if that heart of the lineup's coming up in the ninth, then plan on Helsley being there. So I think both are still viable just because they're a good team and they're going to use both of them. Just plan on you're not going to get every save and then you're okay. Mm-hmm.
Truth with a lot of teams, and we know that, and that's been the case in Minnesota really all mm-hmm. season long here. It appears, perhaps, that Emilio yeah. Pagan, though, is starting to, I don't know if I want to say totally distance himself from Jhoan Duran, but at least maybe be the preferred guy. How confident mm-hmm. are you in that's the split? You know, this is a team that, you know, leading the AL Central, basically been a wire-to-wire first-place team to this point of the season, should feel like they're headed to the playoffs, so probably not a whole lot of changes to the key players in Minnesota. So we can look at this bullpen and say, these are probably the guys, unless they add before the deadline. If it is just Pagan and Duran that we're looking at in the back end of this bullpen, you know, how confident are you that what we're seeing right now between those two is what remains for the rest of the year?
I hate to say it as a fan of the Durantula, but yeah, it's been Pagan getting the primary save share, and he has improved. You know, I was critical of him earlier in the season because of his high home run per fly ball rate last year and some other things, but you know, the Twins have helped him tune up his arsenal and he's doing much better. So unless Pagan hits a rough patch, it looks like he's the primary. Now, I won't say Duran still won't get a save here or there, but in a 12-team league, I'd probably be willing to move on from him and take a shot somewhere else, even though he's still providing strikeouts and things of that nature. And in Sold's league, a sleeper in his bullpen is Griffin Jacks. I think he's going to take the setup innings away from Joe Smith going forward. And in a Sold's league, he'd be an upside guy to get now before he you know, gets taken off of the waiver wire.
Well, Greg, as I know we're going to be wrapping up here soon, but we've talked about a lot of bullpens. We'll talk about one more here. So all these teams, you know, moving to these more flexible bullpen arrangements provides us with, mm-hmm. you know, lots of content every time we do a bullpen episode. So we'll talk about one more team here, the Giants. And I had some skepticism going into the year that this was going to be Camilo Duval's job to just run with, and he was really sort of being drafted that way. Going forward, looking at the next almost 4 months, I mean, do you think that's going to be the case? Is this a Duval and McGee situation? Are there additional relievers that you think are going to figure into saves?
Every time we trust Gabe Kapler, he pulls the rug out from under us. So,
but they win. You know, they win, right?
Why no, they are doing. They're winning games, and you can't deny that. The key with these fluid bullpens is as long as the manager or the staff is telling these guys, hey, this week you're doing A, B, or C. Like, you know, Al, you've got the 1-2-3 hitters. Michael, you've got the 3-4-5 hitters. Or excuse me, 4-5-6, and Jewett, you've got the bottom of the lineup when we're getting into these from the seventh inning on. So then I'm like, okay, then I know what I'm doing. Or Al, you're the lefty specialist, so you're gonna get, you're going to get the Bellinger portion of the batting order, and then, you know, things of that nature. So they've had their last three saves were by three different people. And then yesterday, you know, Dominic Leon was in the ninth inning. I think it's going to be fluid for the next month. And then depending on how players perform or injuries, then things might shake out. Like last year when, you know, people forget last year, McGee and Rogers were splitting saves, I believe, in June. And then from July on, it kind of settled on McGee. So I think we're still in a, you know, trial by fire, and Kapler seeing who can do what, and then he might formalize what they're going to do from July on. I take it that way. So I still keep Duvall atop of the, you know, the leverage ladder, but he's not like the sole save person by any means right now.
Always something to talk about with bullpens in the majors as it relates to the fantasy baseball world. And we've got just the guy to talk about it with us on The Athletic, Greg Jewett. You can follow him on Twitter at GJewett, JEWETT9. And be sure to catch all the great written work that Greg does for us right here at The Athletic. Greg, thanks again for being with us on the Fantasy Baseball Pod.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Always great talking with you guys. I'm sure we'll be doing this again once or twice before the trade deadline.
I am sure we will as well. Do not hide. I know you're a teacher for your regular job. I know it is summer. School's out. You're feeling good. You've got some time off, but we're going to need you to give some of that time back to the students of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast if you can.
With pleasure.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of TAFBP. See, Al still got that acronym down even half an hour later. For Al, for Greg, I am Michael Beller. Thanks so much for listening. Alan DVR, another acronym, with you tomorrow, breaking down the waiver wire heading into the weekend. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to y'all next week.